Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of August 18th. Blackouts across Ontario and the eastern seaboard of the United States last week have left many observers pointing fingers at privatization, deregulation, and corporate malfeasance as the agents of darkness. In both Ontario and the U.S., a wave of privatization over the past decade has radically altered how electricity is generated and distributed at a time when energy consumption is at an all-time high. Here in Ontario, electricity generation and distribution was controlled by the provincial government from 1906. Until 2002. For almost a century, Ontario's electricity supply was produced by a publicly held generation company called Ontario Hydro and sold to consumers through locally owned municipal utilities. The system began to unravel in 1998 when the Conservative provincial government pushed through a privatization plan called the Ontario Energy Competition Act. The act split Ontario Hydro into a number of successor companies, including Ontario Power Generation, or OPG, in charge of power plants and electricity generation, Hydro One, to control the transmission and distribution of electricity across the province, and the Independent Electricity Market Operator, or IMO, responsible for the safe and reliable operation of Ontario's bulk electrical system and for monitoring the wholesale electricity market. As these companies have leased or sold off power plants, transmission lines, and distribution systems to private operators, more than 200 organizations have come to participate in Ontario's electricity market. OPG now controls only 70% of the province's power plants and has plans to sell off half of these over the next few years. Hydro One continues to operate a vast majority of the high-voltage transmission lines in the province and has bought out dozens of municipal utilities, taking control of the power supply out of the hands of Ontario communities and placing it into the hands of large distribution companies. In 2001, the provincial government tried to sell Hydro One as a publicly traded corporation. This effort was cut short after the Supreme Court determined that the government had no legislative authority to sell the company. To win support for its highly complicated, anti-democratic, and inefficient deregulation plan, the provincial government argued that Ontario Hydro, the former publicly held utility, was responsible for massive cost overruns and debt. The government promised that selling off power plants and distribution rights to private operators would lower costs for Ontario consumers. However, the reverse proved to be true. Within 6 months of opening Ontario's electricity market in May 2002, the provincial government was forced to impose a rate freeze, capping energy costs that were spiraling out of control. The rate freeze and associated rebates will be in place until 2006 in the province. Though the freeze has kept electricity costs low for corporate and residential consumers, it has cost taxpayers more than $1.5 billion so far. Deregulation in Ontario has led to other problems as well. The system was created to meet growing demands for energy in the province. Independently run power generators competing for customers, it was thought, would increase the supply of electricity and keep costs low. But due to the rate freeze, profits for private operators have been kept in check. With little incentive for companies to build new efficient power generators, while the government has little interest or money to invest in building its own, energy capacity in the province hasn't grown for the past 8 years, and the provincial government has only just begun to implement an energy action plan to try and deal with the problem. Meanwhile, Ontario Power Generation, or OPG, has sold off 30% of the province's power generation stations, including a number of key nuclear reactors. Nuclear energy makes up more than one-third of Ontario's total energy supply, and the province contains 20 of Canada's 22 CANDU nuclear reactors. Many of these are aging and facing maintenance problems, a situation that has led to the reactors being sold off or shut down indefinitely, further restricting the province's power generating capacity. This summer, the province faced a particularly difficult situation as two reactors scheduled to restart last spring at the Bruce Nuclear Power Plant, currently leased by a consortium led by British Energy, failed to come online in time due to safety concerns and massive cost overruns. In the end, the government tried to increase capacity this summer by leasing polluting gas and diesel generators to industrial users. Nonetheless, Ontario is generally able to meet its own energy needs. 94 nuclear, coal, oil, natural gas, and hydroelectric plants produce more than 30,000 megawatts of electricity in Ontario, though not all of this capacity is available at any one time due to maintenance concerns and cost overruns like those just mentioned. Ontario's power transmission lines, most of which are controlled by the publicly held Hydro One, interconnect with lines in New York, Michigan, Minnesota, Quebec, and Manitoba, allowing up to 4,000 megawatts of electricity to be imported or exported by the province. Traditionally, Ontario has used these networks to import power during times of peak demand and to export power during times of reduced demand. Evidence suggests that Ontario was not importing power at the time of last week's blackouts, though the province was using about 25,000 megawatts of power. However, the shared lines were responsible for the cascading shutdowns that cut power to most of the province. North American protocols have been established to ensure that interconnected power stations are notified immediately when problems develop in one province or state on the grid, but that didn't happen last Thursday. When the blackout hit, emergency safety mechanisms shut down generators in the province without warning. Some of these, for instance at hydroelectric dams, could be returned to full capacity in a relatively short time. But Ontario's nuclear generators take days to restart safely, a situation that has left the province on high alert for further blackouts and brownouts. In the U.S., the electricity supply used to be controlled by local utilities that generated power and carried it to users. This was a legacy of Franklin Roosevelt, who, in 1933, passed the Federal Power Commission and the Public Utilities Holding Company Act, regulating the amount that power companies could charge and requiring energy companies to keep the lights on under threat of arrest. Roosevelt also banned political contributions from utility companies. But in 1992, President George Bush Sr. reversed the legislation, launching the federal deregulation of electricity. Privatization and deregulation over the past decade have directed many former local utilities away from the business of energy generation, towards a focus on power delivery, meaning that many utilities now buy power from plants owned by other companies, reselling the energy to consumers. As in Ontario, the drive for profits among players in the power generation racket has discouraged new investment in the infrastructure required for efficient power generation, leaving growing urban centers dependent upon an antiquated network of aging nuclear reactors and fossil fuel-burning plants. Transmission lines are mostly owned by the utility companies that built them, but are federally regulated, which means it's hard to make a profit from them. For this reason, power companies have little incentive to invest in upgrades and new lines to make the grid more reliable. Power distribution is regulated at the state level, but can be operated by huge for-profit corporations like First Energy or by local governments like the Village of Churchville in upstate New York. Distribution can even be handled by foreign companies. Syracuse-based Niagara Mohawk, which distributes electricity to 1.5 million customers, was bought last year by National Grid Transco, a British company with a monopoly on transmission in England and Wales. In some states, the energy distributed by these companies can be resold to other companies that market the energy to consumers. As privatization and deregulation have taken over the energy sector in the U.S., companies have divided up or shared tasks that were once handled by a single local utility. As a result, there may be several different companies responsible for supplying electricity to any given household. Power plants are bought and sold like real estate, and power companies can operate generation and distribution facilities in a number of different regions. For instance, New York's Consolidated Edison has sold most of its power plants to Atlanta-based Morant, which filed for bankruptcy in July. Niagara Mohawk Power and Central Hudson Gas and Electric, two large utilities in upstate New York, have also sold their power plants. Some of these have been bought by utilities from out of state. For example, the Indian Point nuclear plant in New York State is now owned by Entergy, a Louisiana-based company. Interdependence between these companies and a lack of uniformity in electric utility management in different regions has created an increasingly complex web of power generators and power distributors competing for access to a shared grid, and has required the expansion of shared high-voltage transmission lines to distribute electricity among the vast regions in which a given company is active. The result is that blackouts can extend over thousands of miles and even across borders, although the source may be isolated to one small area. And targeting that source can be very difficult. The trigger for last Thursday's blackouts has been traced to a coal-fired power plant and three high-voltage transmission lines in Ohio that shut down, overloading adjacent transmission lines and triggering a blackout cascade. Over a one-hour period, there were at least eight major power failures in Ohio's nuclear plants and transmission lines. These failures affected the Lake Erie Loop, a massive electrical grid that encircles the lake, moving power from New York to Detroit to Ontario and back to New York. Within minutes, transmission line failures along this loop left 50 million people in Canada and the U.S. in darkness. The power failures originated at lines and substations owned by First Energy, the fourth largest investor-owned electric utility in the U.S., and number 149 on the Fortune 500 list of profit-grabbing corporations. The giant company supplies power to more than 4 million customers in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey, raking in $12 billion in annual revenues. Early Thursday afternoon, First Energy's coal-fired plant at Eastlake, Ohio, went offline. With no electricity, the plant's emission control system shut down and a large plume of carcinogenic soot and tin ash was released into the air, giving rise to speculation the plant was on fire. This still unexplained malfunction at Eastlake was followed by three transmission lines going out of service. Despite the problems, company officials say they were not concerned that a massive blackout was looming. But even if they had been, the advanced warning system that should have notified FirstEnergy officials of problems wasn't operating. Oblivious to the smoke and ash spewing out of Eastlake and to the sagging, overloaded transmission lines nearby, FirstEnergy officials failed to isolate their systems from the larger power grid, unlike three other utilities operating transmission lines in Ohio, which isolated their systems as soon as they detected a problem. About an hour later, breaker switches opened at a power substation in South Cleveland, shutting down a 19-kilometer stretch of transmission towers in the city. Over the next hour, breakers opened at three other substations in Cleveland, and more transmission lines went down, including lines connected to the Samus coal-fired plant near FirstEnergy headquarters in Akron, and lines connected to three FirstEnergy nuclear plants. Next, the problem affected a 40-year-old nuclear plant in Detroit owned by energy giant Edison. More transmission lines went down in Michigan, and the problem spread to Ontario, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and beyond. FirstEnergy, the apparent culprit behind Thursday's blackouts, has an extremely sketchy record of financial mismanagement, environmental negligence, and government lobbying. Last year, the company restated its earnings twice, informing investors that its purported profits were actually a $58 million quarterly loss. Major investment houses have lowered the ratings for FirstEnergy stock, and over the past 2 years, the company has laid off employees in management and operations to save money. Less than 2 weeks ago, a U.S. judge found FirstEnergy culpable for failing to install anti-pollution equipment at the Samus coal-fired plant in Ohio. The judge determined that FirstEnergy executives must have known that changes to the plant would increase its output of pollutants. Last year, FirstEnergy came under fire when it was discovered that the Davis-Besse nuclear reactor it operated in Ohio was dangerously close to a core meltdown. In the fall of 2001, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or NRC, targeted the reactor as one of 12 nuclear power plants that were highly susceptible to corrosion or cracking and ordered the plants to perform inspections. By January 2002, all of these plants except for Davis-Besse were shut down for inspections. After at least five of the plants discovered small cracks, the NRC drafted a letter requiring the 25-year-old Davis-Besse plant to shut down as well. But the agency backed off when FirstEnergy said that the shutdown would be costly and could cause wintertime power shortages in northwest Ohio. Meanwhile, corrosive boric acid had been leaking from nozzles in the reactor's lid for years. By the time the plant was inspected in March 2002, the acid had burned a football-sized hole through more than 6 inches of the reactor's steel cover, the most extensive corrosion ever seen at a U.S. nuclear reactor. Andrew Simasco, a former lead nuclear systems engineer at the plant, filed documents in a federal whistleblower complaint claiming that his reservations about the reactor head were made known to FirstEnergy officials in 1999. Now, the NRC and other federal regulators are investigating the possibility of a cover-up at the plant to determine whether FirstEnergy deliberately and criminally withheld evidence that would have prompted an immediate shutdown order at the reactor, and why NRC officials were slow to investigate the problem. There are several million reasons to explain the government's oversights at Davis-Besse. During the last presidential election, FirstEnergy was the fifth largest energy sector contributor to the Republican Party, giving more than $600,000 to put Bush Jr. in office. FirstEnergy was also among 18 top energy sector donors to the Republican Party that sent executives or representatives to meet with the U.S. Energy Task Force Chairman Dick Cheney or members of the task force and its staff before the November 2000 elections. During that election cycle, energy companies contributed $16 million for the Republican campaign, seven times the sum they gave Democrats. During the last U.S. congressional election, FirstEnergy gave more than $700,000 to support Republican candidates. Now that the shit has hit the battery-powered fan, the North American Electric Reliability Council, a nonprofit industry-sponsored group, has been charged with trying to figure out what went wrong at FirstEnergy last week. However, representatives on the council's various committees include FirstEnergy executives. On the surface, electricity deregulation appears very complicated, but ultimately, it's all about corporate greed. The whole purpose of privatization, deregulation, and the creation of electricity markets is to introduce profits for corporations, creating profits for electricity generators, distributors, and retailers, dividends to investors, and commissions to commodities brokers, simply forces electricity consumers and taxpayers to spend more on energy, and there is no proof that adding in profits to what was once a non-profit public service is cheaper or more efficient. The demand for deregulation isn't coming from consumers. It's coming from big energy companies, private generators, banks, and investment houses who stand to make huge profits from people's dependence on the electricity grid. There's not a single jurisdiction in North America where electricity deregulation has resulted in lower prices and more supply. Deregulation is such a dismal failure that 22 states in the U.S. have now shelved deregulation plans, including California, where deregulation led to greedy power companies hoarding energy to boost prices, leading to blackouts and brownouts across the state. Over the last 10 years, competition in the U.S. and Canadian electricity markets has resulted not in the creation of more electricity supply, but in the prolonged use of environmentally destructive and potentially lethal nuclear power and fossil fuel-burning plants. When profit becomes the main goal, environmental concerns evaporate. Energy efficiency no longer makes sense when electricity dealers profit from increased energy consumption. So take a minute to shut off all the lights and the air conditioner and contemplate the electricity racket. Write a letter by candlelight to your government representatives urging public ownership and accountability in the energy sector, support locally based energy initiatives, or consider investing in companies that are developing safe and renewable energy sources. Signing off from the Lake Erie Loop, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.